Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley. Gus, good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing, Loggs?
I'm doing good. It's a new week.
It is a new week.
It's always good to have a new week, but unfortunately sometimes we go back and we talk about the previous week and how it relates to this week.
Sure.
And that's obviously going to be part of our conversation today as we eventually end up at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this week's preparation, it seems that this kind of seems to be a theme with your football team, is that there's a lot of conversation about injuries. And I don't ever remember a year to where, you know, the conversation about injuries happens so frequently in the first 4 weeks of the season. And I know you've got to be getting, I don't want to say tired of it, but because that's the challenge of being a head coach in the National Football League, but getting fatigued of that conversation.
Well, yeah, you know, but I know there's, you know, people are interested and want to know what's taking place. So, you know, I think every team has injuries, and, you know, some teams have more than others. And I think what we look at, and I think I mentioned this last week, where we've been fortunate is some of the injuries have taken place where we do have some depth. But the challenge is, like our safety spot, where you're going into the game with really three, you know,
yeah.
And you've got your fingers crossed that you can stay healthy throughout the game and, you know, make it through with three. So, you know, that's the challenge. But you know what? We've got three, and we like those three. But that's the, I think, the fatigue part that you're talking about, the, you know, the concern that says, okay, how, are we going to be all right through this game?
Right, you know? Right. And, well, let's go back to last week. Really, it was news last week. But Brandon Leonard goes to IR. The shoulder problem, I guess, is something that unable to deal with. He goes on IR. Full recovery expected by next year?
Yeah. Yep, the surgery went very well. So
he's had it done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And A.J. Cann is now your starting right guard, third-round draft pick out of South Carolina. Very smart young man. I remember watching his college tape, very powerful guy. Watched him in camp, very powerful guy. And as a defensive lineman, it's probably easier switching sides because A.J. was a left guard at South Carolina for so long. But the ability to move to the right side, I thought, would be a little bit of an adjustment for him. And I thought he played pretty well at Indy.
He did. He did a nice job. I mean, for the first time starting, getting in there. And like you said, hey, Brandon Linder was a very good player for us. So it's unfortunate that, you know, he went down. But A.J. gets an opportunity, and A.J. played pretty well. There was some communication, I think I mentioned that this week, that we got to clean up these communication errors that took place. And, you know, the offensive line, the quarterback, the communication that takes place there, that was a part of it. But, I mean, overall, the body of work, pretty good day.
Yeah, in fact, one of those plays we talked about communication, going to look at on Jaguars.com Film Room Friday, where you've got a linebacker in the A-gap, and you got a big guy, three technique on the outside, and he kind of goes to the wrong one, and him and TJ end up blocking the same guy, and it turns loose a free rusher. But, I mean, those are learning things.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I think when we talk about the continuity of the offensive line, you really want to build continuity where these guys have played with each other, they understand the communication that takes place. When you insert a new player, sometimes that changes. And even on double teams, you know, Logs, you're hitting a double team with Jeremy Parnell and Brandon Linder. They kind of have a feel when to come off and work to the next level.
If I remember right, I saw a double team to where I think one guy hit the other guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite timed up right.
Right. So, you know, that's the part that the more that they get a chance to play with one another, and that's where A.J., the challenge was because he was on the left side. Now he's moving on the right. So where he used to work with Luke Jokel, now he's working with Jeremy Parnell. So those timing things have just got to work on, and as they play next to each other more, those things will be rectified.
And you talked about how, you know, positions, if certain positions get hit, you know, you're concerned about depth. But I mean, if there was, and look, it's unfortunate for Brandon Linder, but if there was ever a position that you feel really good about, it would have to be the depth that you have at the guard and center positions.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. AJ was playing very well in the preseason, and as the regular season goes on, in practice, he was showing up now. He was doing some really good things. So, you know, we were looking at him saying, okay, he's getting closer to having an opportunity. If something happened and he played, you know, we felt like he would do very well. And so be it. He got his opportunity, and he did some really good things.
Is he a natural right guard? I know he had, 51 starts at South Carolina at left guard. But, you know, guards at the NFL level, typically your left guard is athletic. He can pull, move. Your right guard is a little shorter, a little bit more powerful because most teams run the ball right-handed. Isn't he really better suited for that side?
Well, that is his strength, his power. You know, very strong-handed. And so to be a right guard is not out of the realm. I mean, that is his strength. But he does have the ability to pull and do some things there too. So I do think right guard suits him well. It's in his wheelhouse of his strengths and his power. And, you know, I think that's why he adjusted pretty well.
Before we talk about some of the offensive production, because we're going to get to that, one of the other guys that from watching the game film, and this is not something that's just this week. It seems to be every week. The more that I watch Allen Hurns, because Allen Hurns is a guy, when you watch him in shorts and you watch him in practice, you're like, okay, he looks solid. But he's got that trait to where it becomes game day, and I don't know if it's just a chemistry thing because he's one of the few wide receivers that has been out there from the very beginning with his quarterback, Blake Bortles. But every week he seems – When the lights are bright, he shows up, and he shows up big.
You know what? It's interesting because Julius Thomas and I were talking about this with the wide receiver group. He said, you know what, Gus? Usually old teaches young. Rarely do you see young teach young. Mm-hmm. You know, and that receiving group, that's what we have. We've got some young players there, and sometimes they're looking for that. Who's that veteran that they learn from? Well, really, Allen Hurns is like that veteran of that group. I mean, the other receivers watch him. The other receivers watch how he takes care of his body. The other receivers watch how he practices. He has that ability, and he has that leadership trait that those guys gravitate towards. He's such a pro at such a young age. And then to see it transfer onto the field and see the production he's having, it's really a credit to him.
As part of last week's game, you know, you didn't get the point total that you wanted to. You want to clean up a lot of things, whether it be the mental aspect of the game or cleaning up some timing things. Having players lead, and whether it be young, old, doesn't matter. Are you starting to see that leadership emerge? I mean, two tough weeks. I mean, you take a beating in New England, and then you have a disappointing loss in Indianapolis. Are you starting to see the leadership emerge? Because in tough times, the strong leadership steps up.
Sure. Yeah, I like the guys in the locker room as far as that. I think that, you know, accountability takes practice too. You know, that's the other part of it. And I think these guys, you know, especially on the offensive side, that's with our conversation, you're seeing them individually mature. And Allen Hurns getting better. You're seeing Allen Robinson from the first game where we're talking about multiple drops to now where they're playing, you know, at a pretty high level. So you're seeing those things take place. A TJ Yeldon, a Blake playing more consistent. You know, he's had, one interception in three games. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing that part of it. But now the challenge is, all right, that's great, but we need to operate that way and see that growth as a unit. And these communication things and the penalties and things like that are showing up, that's what we need to attack now. And, you know, you sense it to this week. You see the players are saying, all right, it's the next step now. For us to play consistently, we have to be on the details. And that's really been the approach this week.
And as part of that, as a coaching staff, how do you heighten the awareness of some of that in practice? You know, because it's not like it's a technique. It's not like it's an understanding of an opponent's scheme or anything. How do you heighten the awareness? Okay, hey, look, we just need to have more awareness, and we need to be able to have awareness not just for ourselves but for everybody else around us.
Well, I think the challenge is, as you look at it, and, you know, don't take this as an excuse. I just give you this analogy, is to say, all right, this is the fourth game of this offense in the regular season. Okay, now – there might be a protection error. AJ Khan just moved over to right guard. There might be a protection error that takes place within that game. So the challenge is, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable? And right now, it's not acceptable. We have a high standard, and the objective is to go in there and clean this stuff up, and let's, you know, get this taken care of right now. And that's the challenge. But like I said, a guy like AJ, a guy like Blake, Wiz, all those guys have a lot of pride, and they're going to get it taken care of.
With that side of the ball being very young, I mean, I was actually going and looking at some birthdays, and I wrote these notes down. You know, Allen Robinson's 22, Blake Bortles is 23, TJ Yeldon is 22, Alan Hearns is 23, Luke Jokel's 23, you know, Zane Beatles, Wisniewski, Parnell are probably in that 28, 26-year-old range. AJ Cann is a young player, 23 years old. Young, when I talk about leadership, because I remember kind of growing through the process, it's amazing that some young players just have a natural ability to lead.
Right.
And sometimes it takes a little bit of a track record and a little bit of success for that leadership to start to emerge. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think they have those leadership qualities, but I think they really come through once the player has confidence in what he's doing. You mentioned Allen Hearns. Well, Allen Hearns is learning a new offense as well. But now once he has ownership of his responsibilities and feels really good about what he needs to do, then it starts to spread. Now you start to see his leadership spread through the wide receiving group. And then it spreads, you know, to the whole offense. You know, that's what takes place. And, you know, that's really the challenge for these guys. But I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it in the wide receiver group. I'm seeing it in the tight end group. I'm seeing it in the offensive line. But, you know, when we talked about earlier, Dave and I, we knew we were going to be young. We knew that that's how we wanted this team. We wanted Allen Hearns to be a leader in his second or third year so that for a period of time, we've got a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of knew part of this was going to take place. But because of their talents and because of what they bring to the table, you know, now we're just trying to accelerate it.
On the offensive line, from watching their performance, I still think that is a unit that is playing so much better than last year. But at the same time, you know, you say, okay, accountability, you know, expectations are heightened. I still think they're capable of more as a group.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And but that's a good sign.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at them and say, hey, we've got far more potential to take this to another level, let's challenge them in that factor. You know, and I think as you look at a team, you know, with our offense, with our defense and special teams, the word challenge comes up and say, oh, yeah, we need to challenge the expectation, the high standard. Let's challenge our players. But careful, right, Logs? You don't want to attack him. Because
mm-hmm.
once you attack him, now it's different. Now it's a different. Now you're bowing up. Now you're. It's not about let's get this right. It's more about who's right. And that's the challenge, to challenge them to the higher standard. And that's what I love about our team. They bought into that now. They love put that on us, put that challenge on us, and let's go out there and hold each other accountable.
And with a game like that, you know, defense holds the Indianapolis Colts to 13 points in regulation. They feel good about their performance. Offensively, hey, we put a lot of yards up, but, hey, you know, we didn't put any points up. And, well, Jason Myers, you missed a couple kicks that could have given us a victory. Are you still seeing the team stay circled?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they're great, like I said. When you challenge them and they come out, and I just feel like we mentioned, hey, you know what, we've got to be on the details. And you're seeing, I'm not talking about just the details of going out there and execution. I mean, the whole thing, everything we do, how you take notes, how you're paying attention, you know, the snap count, the formation, the protections to being on time, you know, all those things. And, I mean, they have hit it. They have nailed it this week. And but they're ready for all those challenges. I think they're saying, you know what, with what's taken place, all right, you know, now that we've experienced it, it even becomes stronger for them.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. And this segment was brought to you by Beard's Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. More with the head coach right after this with the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Ladies, get ready for an incredible night at Everbank Field. The Jaguars Women Association presents Meet Me at the 50, benefiting In the Pink Thursday, October 15th at 5:30. Keynote speaker Susie Colbert of ESPN, Michaela and Gus Bradley, and an interactive night of football. One-on-one by Jaguars coaches and players ensures a night of football and fun. To register, visit jaguars.com/50. Looking forward to that event, huh? Next
yeah,
week, right? Next
it's
Thursday?
A great event. Susie Kohler coming in, and I know getting a chance to visit. She's really excited about it, and appreciate her taking time to come down.
This is not the what year is this for this event? Third?
Yes, the third year.
Third year?
Yeah, they've done a great job. They've, you know, the amount of money that they've raised and, you know, has increased every year. I think last year was, what, close to $25,000. The year before that, it was $10,000. So it's, you know, made big jumps, and I know they're hoping this year that'll be even bigger.
Well, I'm looking forward to being there. Hope to be there after we finish up in here next Thursday night. And, again, people go to jaguars.com/50 to learn more about it. Stay on the offensive side of the ball here for a minute. The left tackle, Luke Jokel, I thought for the first game back, from coming back from an ankle injury, I thought he played pretty well.
He did. You know what? And he just has a different mindset. You know, I think that, that was different from last year. You know, he's playing with more confidence, and I think everybody's watching. Coming back from an injury, how fast was he going to come back, and what was going to be his mentality? And he really did. He had a good game last week.
Yeah, the one area that I really enjoy watching, Luke, and I've been saying this, you know, a lot of people want to criticize Luke Jokel. But the one area I say you cannot criticize Luke Jokel in is his ability to run block and how he has great pad level. He gets movement, that's the one thing that I was going, okay, I want to see what he can do in the run game because he's been so good at it before. And with an ankle, a lot of times that's the first thing to kind of maybe show up that's not there. And it was.
Yeah, to come back from the injury he had as fast as he did and able to play and then to play at a high level, it's great credit to him and our training staff.
All right, another guy I wanted to talk about, Allen Robinson. Great performance, had not big numbers. He's leading the league in 22 yards a catch, but you know what? I think it can be more.
Yeah, great competitor. Logs, great competitor. You know, both him and Allen Hurns, everywhere you go in the building, they're side by side. And, you know, they're different. They have different styles of how they play. But I can just tell in the demeanor, Allen Robinson, I mean, he's a guy, he wants the ball. And he wants it. And if there's any chance, throw it up. And, you know, he'll go for it and he'll make plays. So I can just see his mentality and how he's – the aggressiveness that's coming out in him is really, even the course of over a couple of games, it's really starting to show through.
Now, a couple of the plays that I remember from Indianapolis on the 148-yard catch that he had, and it was kind of a diving catch. I thought that if he runs through that – and maybe I'm wrong. If he runs through that, maybe that's a touchdown. You know, we're talking about offense and precision and scoring points
sure.
instead of kicking field goals. And then he had another opportunity where he was behind, I think it was Vontae Davis, to where he slows down and tries to high point it. Well, here's another opportunity to keep running, and who knows what happens.
Sure. You know, and I think that's, you know, sometimes the timing. You saw the middle, there was no safety in the middle of the field. So the throw could be led more towards the goal pole, you know, the uprights, and, you know, to lead him more in the middle. It was more on the hash or outside the hash. And then Allen's timing, you know, so it's just, you know, it's the right read, the right throw, but that precision part of it, you're right. And sometimes that's just, you know, the more and more they practice together and understand each other, how they're going to, you know, run the route.
Maybe I'm nitpicking, right?
Well, no, I think you're accurate in doing that because, you know what, it feels like, you know, when you have games like this, there's low margin of error. You know, it's not... 34-10, and okay, these plays taking place. The games are close, and when you start looking at each of these plays and you think, what could have been if we're right on it? But that's the part that I think as we go through this in these games like this, that's the challenge to say, okay, it's good lessons for us. How important is precision? We all understand it.
How important or what kind of an effect can getting Julius Thomas back have on these two young wide receivers? And also along with that, is there any update on Julius Thomas?
Yeah, you know, he's limited, and, you know, he's the doctor clears him on one aspect, and then he goes through that, and then he has to get cleared on another aspect. So he started catching the ball. So he was over in another field today. I saw him a portion of it catching balls and going through it. So, you know, it's just wait and see. What impact he'll have, you know, we'll see. You know, he's got phenomenal ability. He practices hard. He works hard. He's got, he's got that veteran presence, even though he's been in the league a short period of time, relatively speaking. He, you know, it'll be interesting. We haven't had him, you know, in a regular season game and really a couple preseason games. So the impact he has, but I know this, we know the talent he brings. So when he gets cleared, then we'll decide and get a chance to see him.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll take a few calls, 1-800-355-NFL1 or locally 355-6351, and we'll do that. And then we have a very special caller when we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logan alongside the head coach, and we'll open some phone lines up here. So, folks, you can go ahead and dial it up, 1-800-355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351, or locally it's just 355-6351. We had a caller that called in earlier today and wasn't going to be able to call the Gus Bradley Show, so we just went ahead and recorded him, and it was from Bubba. Bubba Shadwick. So let's go ahead and play it.
The Jags could use the work of tight end Julius Thomas. I swear to God, I ain't going out there and sweating. Give me some food. Yeah, I don't want no damn hot dog. Go turkey hunting.
J.P. Shadrick, we were in here, and he was recording a little Jaguars thing, and he says, I'm going to read it like you. Does that sound like me?
Yeah, I thought that's not Bubba, that's Logs.
No,
right there talking.
Come on. Oh, we had to have a little fun with JP. That's good stuff, JP. On the defensive side of the ball, the big question mark this week, and to me it's a big question mark because it's a position group. We go back to talking about positions that some have depth and some really don't. And linebacker is a position you didn't have a lot of numbers at. So you have Paul Posluszny with reportedly a high ankle, and then you have John Lotulelei, who is in the concussion program. That's two linebackers that are that hurts now.
Yeah, you know what? That's where, again, you rely on your depth. And, you know, we'll see with Puz. I know that, you know, he's day-to-day. I think we're in a point now where we would say he might not practice today, or he didn't practice today, or maybe even tomorrow, and then reevaluate it and see. So that's more day-to-day. So we'll see how that one turns out. Fortunate that Thurston, I think sometimes, you know, Logs, when you get pushed into a situation because of an injury during a game, it's almost easier. He jumps in and
don't
he
have
goes.
Any anxiety.
Yeah, you know, where if he knew he was going to start before the game even began, you know, he might have a little bit of that. So, you know, if it does become Thurston, who's our starter, you know, I think that benefited him last week.
And the new guy that you signed, James Michael Johnson, who was with Tampa Bay, a veteran player, able to get any information from him at the same time?
You know, he's scrambling right now to get all our information. But, you know, he has. I think he started 19 games or something while he was in the NFL over various teams. So he brings a little bit of experience. The challenge is, you know, to get him caught up based on, you know, what happens with Lotu.
Looking at the defensive performance at Indianapolis, even though you allow 13 points as a coach, you're still critical, right? I mean, margin for error is small. Hey, what could we have done on the defensive side of the ball better to be able to get us a victory at Indianapolis, and what can we do going forward to improve our chances of future victory? What did you learn in that game?
Well, you know, I think the run defense, it showed up, and I think that was a good sign. And then we got back to the style of who we are. You know, we brought Devon House in, guys like that, Grazi, Aaron Colvin, D-Mac. These guys, you know, the length that they're looking at, that's what they do. They play read technique, they play man coverage, and we want to utilize that. And I felt like we got away from that a little bit in the New England game. We came back and played more of those concepts, and I thought they really stood up to the challenge. So those were good signs. I thought, you know, the pressure on the quarterback, the three fumbles, we got two of them. But it goes back to takeaways, right, Lux? I mean, you see a takeaway, they have the ball in the logo area, and the offense goes in and scores. That's how you gain more points, too. When the defense gets turnovers and makes it a shorter field for an offense, that will help in the points, too. So I think that's the big emphasis. Continue
more
to do
turnovers.
What we do. And we got to get the ball to the offense in ideal field position.
And more turnovers, you know, the reality is, the old saying is, it starts up front. Can you find ways to generate more pressure? You know, last week against the Indianapolis Colts, a team that didn't have an offensive line that was really settled, they had struggled the week before. in the weeks before that, prior to even when they made the change the week before that. Were you happy with the pass rush throughout that game?
Well, we had good hits on him, and we had, what, 3 sacks, I think, you know, in the game. So you always want more. I think any time that you can affect the quarterback and make poor decisions, you've got a chance. So yeah, I think you're always striving for more. I think where we look at is third down. You know, third down when, you know, we're not as high as we need to be in that area. So, you know, that's been a point of emphasis as well.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and then when we come back, we will take your calls. Again, 1-800-355-NFL1 or 355-6351, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. We're going to go ahead and let's bring up Lucas down in Gainesville here on the Gus Bradley Show. Good evening, Lucas. You're on with the head coach, Gus Bradley.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Gus, I'm going to be there in Tampa this weekend. And over 2,000 Jags fans from what I heard. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. You know, a lot of people talked about play call. One of the play calls I really liked was the end of the fourth quarter. You sent Yeldon in motion when you had trips to the right. Got him on a screen. Got him out of bounds. Didn't see that coming. It was nice. But also, you know, you said you were going to be bold, and we had third and two, I believe, on the goal line early in the game. Threw it incomplete. I feel like that was a good opportunity to go for it. I'll take your response off the air.
Okay, great questions. First of all, I mean, 2,000 fans, that's outstanding.
I think it's going to be more than that. The Bold City Brigade is like taking over a parking lot over
This Bold James. City Brigade now, they're unbelievable. You know, to get that numbers to go to Tampa, I mean, I know our players, we talked about it in a team meeting. We will, you know, just about the support, and our fans are coming out. You know, I've said that. They're amazing, and they deserve more. So that's what we hope to do. Now, as far as the screen to TJ, that was at the end of the game.
It was the end of the game to get a few more yards.
Yeah. And that was really a check, you know, based on how they were playing us. And that was one of the things. They played a pretty standard way to really protect the sideline to make sure that you don't run a three-level route. Mm-hmm. And so it was an adjustment that we got, and we thought, you know what, we can get it. Who knows? TJ's sharp. Let's get at least 5 and see what happens. And it worked. It got us 5 yards closer.
I'm trying to remember exactly how much time was on the clock. It had to be like 10 seconds.
10 seconds,
okay,
yeah.
10 seconds on the clock, and I'm sitting there going, okay, this is a coach's decision now. This has got to come from the head coach. This is not Greg Olsen at this moment. You're trying to maybe creep up. And so now you're trusting a second-year quarterback and a rookie running back to execute that play. I said it on the air that just displays a tremendous amount of confidence in a young running back to be able to do that and execute it.
Right. And
because no timeouts left at that point.
No timeouts, yeah. We just felt like we need it. It's something that we practice. You have multiple ways of doing it. And that was the one that worked for that game. And you'd like to even get more, but TJ's got really good instincts, and you do trust him, you know, and he made the right decision. And then the last thing was, what was the last question?
I don't remember exactly. It was about play calling, but to me, play calling is kind of a difficult question to ask. But I got a question about play calling. A lot of people point to the, I think it was overtime, 3rd and 11 prior to sending Jason Myers out there. Was it a 3rd and 11?
Yeah, there's a 3rd and 11.
And a lot of people questioned running the ball to T.J. Yeldon. But going up until that point, T.J. Yeldon was starting to get some big gains. I'm okay with that call because you're already within reasonable range because your kicker has such a strong leg. Did you second-guess that one at all, or do you even second-guess that?
Well, no. I think you look at it and you wonder, you know, if there's a different way to go about it. But at that time, you know, really where his field goal range was is the 37, and we were at the, 33, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. So we were in field goal range and felt like, hey, you know, we've hit some runs. Maybe we can spring one here and get even closer. You know, we're still in good field goal position. So I know it doesn't sound bold, right? But we did have a snap that was unfortunate.
Bold calls are ones that work.
Right, and I think the snap that, you know, that hit the ground, we lost yardage, or sometimes, you know, you got great faith. You don't want to give a penalty or anything like that because we're already in field goal range. And, you know, we just felt like we could break one and, you know, at least get closer and, and get it to the area of the field that we felt like would be in position for his strength, you know, in the middle of the field. So that was the decision behind that.
How's Jason Myers this week?
He's good. He's really good. You know, disappointed like we all are, you know, in that whole game. And but he'll bounce back, and I talked to him on Monday, and you know, his demeanor, his competitiveness, he knows he's a professional. He knows what his job is to do, and we just have great faith in him.
I remember my rookie year, my next-door neighbor was Pat Leahy, long-time kicker of the New York Jets, a great guy. And I remember having conversations with Pat about kicking. And he said, it's kind of tough sometimes. He said, because, you know, you make them, everybody wants to be your friend. And then when you don't, nobody wants to be your friend.
Yeah, that's the life of a kicker. That's why you see a lot of turnover.
Yeah.
You know, and what was he? I think he was 6 for 7 or 7 for 8 in field goals up to that point. Kicked the game winner against Miami. You know, so, and then, you know, 0 for 2. And, you know, that's the part that, you know, he's has to deal with, the team deals with. But like I said before, it shouldn't really get to that point, right, Logs?
Yeah.
I mean, we should have more points than what we had. And, you know, it wouldn't come to that situation.
I just remember telling Pat when I was a young player, a rookie, I said, look, I said, I don't care if you make them or you miss them, you always got my support. And the reason I said that is his wife used to be a great cook. I was a rookie in New York.
I'm sure there was an agenda part of it, Logs.
No. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk to Elliot and Andrew right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
All right, we're back here on the Gus Bradley Show, and let's get right to a few phone calls. Let's start with Elliot, who is in San Marco. Good evening, Elliot.
Hey, Coach. Hey, Jeff. Coach, I felt like Jeff sort of threw you a hanging curveball that you could have knocked out of the park there, so I'm going to give you a chance to do it again.
Okay.
For a minute, throw on your old Seattle Seahawks defensive coordinator hat.
Okay.
And talk to us a little bit about how much, in terms of matchups, how much Julius Thomas, if he plays close to how he did in Denver, how much does he change the way defenses are able to kind of smother Allen Robinson? How much does he change the way our slot receivers are able to get open? And how much does he force a defense to go, holy crap, that's Julius Thomas?
Right.
What does that do? What do you think that should do for our offense in terms of efficiency up and down the field, but especially in the red zone? And I'll take it off the air.
Okay. That's a great question. Okay. So, first of all, man. We're going to play man. Now you look at and say, I do not want a linebacker matched up on Julius. So, if our rules are based on a certain pressure that we're bringing, it forces a linebacker to cover Julius. We might have the other linebacker cover the tight end and roll a safety down to him. So that's the part. You're still going to run the pressure. You just might have to change the matchups. If he is productive, if he is really straining a defense, a la Julio.
Julio Jones.
Julio Jones.
Who's been tremendous.
Right. I mean, I'm talking about when you stress it, it's week after week after week. This guy's catching 10 balls for 140 yards. Next week, 11 catches for 135 yards. And the next week, and you're going, okay, we got to slow this down. This guy is changing the outcome of the game. Now it forces you to look at saying, we might have to play more split safety, take a guy out of the box, put him back there. It can change it. If a guy catches 6 balls for 45 yards, you're saying, oh, we're not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I think it's going to be based off his production, how much it's going to change a defense and how they go about it. The first time, you might not see a team change their personnel.
Teams are going to want to see you prove it.
Yeah, it's like Graham up in Seattle. You know, I don't know how many catches he had the first couple games. Not many, right?
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, why would I adjust so much as a defense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to stay true to who we are, and we're going to ball. Now, if repeatedly, game after game, this guy is changing the outcome, that's where defenses are forced to really look at changeups. And that's where Gronk, right?
Yeah.
And doing it. Okay, this guy is doing it repeatedly, game after game. He's a difference maker. Now you're forced to do something as a defense to make sure matchups are correct.
Great answer. It's not about a name. It's about production.
That's right.
Name starts producing, then all of a sudden then you have to change the way you play.
Right. Is that answer it, Elliot?
That's okay. Thank you, Elliot. That's a great question. Let's go talk to Andrew at the beach. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Logs, Gus, can you feel it? It's getting closer. It's about to happen. I have a weird feeling things are going to start taking off. My son Bryce and I are heading down for the game. Can't wait. I sent you pics of him with the players last year. He just loves and eats up the Jaguars.
Oh, that's great, Andrew.
Yes, sir. Thank you for responding to me as well. That meant a lot that you guys are high touch like that. He even asked me, he goes, Dad, can you sign me up for the Bold City Brigade? Because I'm not even a member. And we happen to have seats right in their section because we planned this when the schedule first came out. And I foresee Telvin reintroducing himself to old Jameis multiple times during the game and having a pick six. And I called the Dolphins victory on the show a couple weeks ago, and I'm doing it today. It's a lock. Jameis is going to think he's in a rerun of North Dallas 40.
Thank you, Andrew.
No, that's great. I appreciate that, Andrew. And for you making the trip, you know, like we said earlier, it sounds like a lot of people are going down, so it'll be a great atmosphere with our fans for us.
Hopefully it's not like Cannonball Run. You know what I mean with the Bold City Brigade. Hopefully, I think they got buses. That would be a good thing. Let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, and as promised, we'll talk a little Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and let's start with the first overall pick in the draft. Jameis Winston had a rough outing last week against the Carolina Panthers. Not exactly optimum playing conditions, rain off and on throughout that ball game, but in the first five snaps of that ball game, he had a fumbled exchange with the center, and then he had a pick six to Josh Norman, who had one here in week one from the Carolina Panthers. What do you see out of Jameis Winston?
Well, I see a guy that, if he has time, it can make big plays for him. Yeah, you know, he really is effective, especially in the middle of the field. You know, the digs and the glances and the routes that are there. Now, I think, you know, because of his height. The perimeter he does very well too, but longer developing, it's all based on if he's getting pressure. And but he's done some good things. Now, when he does get pressure, and, you know, sometimes he's made a bad throw and an interception occurs, or it's a tip, or like the conditions you were talking about. So it's that up and down. Mm-hmm. And
young trait.
Yeah, and he's going to go through that. And you see it, right? New Orleans, no interceptions, 18 or 17 for 24 for 200 yards or whatever it was, you know, managed the game very well. Then he comes back and has multiple interceptions in a game, one for a pick six. So it's that part of it that you see, that a guy can get hot, kind of like all Blake was last year. Game he'd get hot and do very well, and then the next game, you know, you're not quite sure how it's going to take place. So I think you're seeing a little bit of that. But when you look at the skill set, like you and I were talking about off the air, when you look at the skill set and what he brings to the table, I understand why they took him as high.
Well, they've got Dirk Koetter as an offensive coordinator, and as a defensive coordinator and as a, I don't want to say a defensive-minded head coach, but as, you know, a background in defense, with coordinators kind of moving around the league, do you keep books on coordinators pretty much everywhere they've been to understand them?
Sure, and, you know, certain situations, how they respond, you know, and how they react and what their mentality is. But from place, team to team, it's different. You know, Dirk does a great job utilizing the strengths of his players. That's what you have written down. So it might not look exactly like Atlanta, but you know that he's going to run plays that are really are to the strengths of what his team is.
Well, one of the strengths of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, before we get to the big wide receivers, you got to talk a little bit about Doug Martin. A couple years ago as a rookie, he was, I think, on SportsCenter highlight, it seemed like every week, you know, the muscle hamster moniker kind of came about.
Right. Well, and I think he's, what, in the top 10 in rushing, I think, something like that.
Eighth now.
So he, you know, a lot of feeling that he's back. And when you watch tape, you see it. You see long runs. He had a long run, you know, there were 35 yards against Cleveland. You see him, his instincts. You see his power. You know, so you see the all the combinations that I know you saw a couple years ago when he first came out.
The offensive line, they're playing two rookies, one second-round pick, Donovan Smith, he's the left tackle, and I want to make sure I pronounce this right. Ali Marpet, the right guard from Hobart. And just a little bit ago, we were talking to Dave Caldwell, and I was like, where's Hobart? He said New York.
Right, yeah. You know, and he's doing pretty good for a rookie.
Yeah, he's doing well.
Yeah, he's done a nice job stepping in there. So, and Logan Mankins,
Excellent player.
Yeah, unbelievable player. And you see why they brought him in, some veteran presence, a true pro, and really bring some stability to that group as far as leadership.
Marpet, and I didn't know this until I was reading the Bucks release, he is the highest drafted Division III player in NFL history. He was drafted in the third round.
Yeah, he's talented. I know we watched a lot of tape on him, and you could see his traits. And, you know, every week you see him improving and getting better.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk about tight end slash wide receivers Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
You know, watching the film, Gus, welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, everybody. Watching the film this week, I remember watching a play, and it was end zone shot, and it was Jameis Winston throwing it to the middle of the field, and number 83 catches it. And I was like, I know they got Mike Evans, but I think he's a team's number. And I know they got Vincent Jackson, but that's not Vincent Jackson because that's too big to be Vincent Jackson. And I looked at the chart, and I'm like, that is Vincent Jackson. Yeah. I mean, these guys are big.
They are. They're both, you know, I mentioned maybe earlier in this program about this is a different style of receiving group that we've seen. You know, they both got great height, size. They use their bodies very well. And they've got very good speed. And extremely, knowing Mike Evans now, extremely competitive. Extremely competitive. So, you know, a great challenge for our corners.
Yeah, 6'5", 230 for Vincent Jackson, 6'5", 231 for Mike Evans. They haven't had Austin Seferian Jenkins, their tight end, available in a couple weeks. Not sure what his status is going to be this week. On the other side of the ball, Gerald McCoy, we talked at the very beginning of the show about A.J. Cam playing right guard, and Gerald McCoy kind of moves around a little bit. He really likes to pass rush over that right guard or from the left defensive tackle spot, so A.J. Cam will get to go against a very good football player.
He will. And, you know, a disruptive player, guy that likes to penetrate on runs and then his pass rush, you know, moves around quite a bit. And he's just disruptive. And he's like an ideal three technique, drafted very high. And, you know, they've got a good player there.
I think it was what? Ndamukong Suh was one. And then Gerald McCoy was was he two or three? Tony Pasoli says three. So.
Todd Wash was there.
Yeah. I mean, really, really good football player. The other guy that really stands out is this linebacker, Lavonte David. 1 year, I think he had five interceptions and seven sacks at the linebacking position, which in a 4-3 world, those are incredible numbers.
Right. I know in talking to their media, they were asking me to compare him with Derrick Brooks. Well, when you start comparing, you know, a guy like that to Derrick Brooks, you know how well he's thought of. And then when you watch tape, you can see moves around very well, very fast, fast flow linebacker, extremely good in coverage. So, you know, he's very talented. And really, both those linebackers, I think they're both, what, 227? They're like mirrored.
Yeah, Quan Alexander, their fourth-round pick out of LSU, is playing the Mike position. He's 6'1", 227.
Yeah, and I think they're the same size. And, you know, they're guys that really utilize their speed, both under 4'6". So fast linebackers. I just saw on tape before I came in here, he ran up the line of scrimmage on a play-action pass and covered a race route.
What's like, a race route? Describe to fans what a race route is.
A deep over route that was about 23 yards deep by Colson in the New Orleans game.
Marcus Colson.
You know, and rarely, I mean, if you get caught up in the line of scrimmage, that's wide open. Well, he ended up making the play on it. So tremendous speed, tremendous speed.
The corners, Levy Smith, a lot of time spent in Chicago. Tim Jennings, the smaller cornerback when he was paired with the guy that's in Carolina now.
Peanut Tillman.
Yeah, Charles Tillman. Is now in the starting lineup. Autron Verner started the first two games. So you got Tim Jennings, and then Mike Jenkins has been playing because Jonathan Banks has been hurt. So you got a little seasoning in the secondary to go against.
You did, and they brought in Conte too, the safety, you know, that's familiar with Lovey's system. So when you watch them on tape, you see that, you know, those guys helping out, but they're playing the coverage very well. You know, the cover two that they play and the man and, you know, the disguise and rolling down, playing some three deep and man. So I think that veteran presence has really helped their young squad.
All right, so we only got a minute left. Your first job in the National Football League was 2006 as a quality control coach at Tampa Bay. What's your best memory from that first job?
Oh, boy, that's a great one. You know, I think coming in early in the morning, I thought I was coming in early to get work done ahead of time before the building filled up. and John Gruden
was there every time,
getting a cup of coffee at 3 a.m. and you know, he was unbelievable. His work ethic and, you know, the time that he put in.
And he's fun to listen to on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I think that was right at the time Monty Kiffin was going to sleep.
Yeah, because he was the late guy. He was the island.
Yeah.
John was waking up with the birds. All right, let's wrap this thing up. We'll talk to everybody same time, same place next week right here on The Gus Bradley Show.